Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Sports Radio 610 presents Seth Payne and Sean Pendergast.
Hey, what's happening, everybody? Happy New Year's Eve.
It's the last day of the decade.
Last day of the decade. Did you, Seth, make this decade count as much as you possibly could? Are you going to wake up tomorrow morning with regrets about how you handled the 2010 through 2019 decade? Or did you maximize? Were you the best Seth Payne you could be this decade?
Oh, God. No. Man. But nobody ever is, really, right?
Everybody I wasn't the always... best Seth Payne I could be either.
Bill Belichick decade. Is probably, you know, lashing himself on the back right this moment.
Dude won like six
just
titles.
Doing, yeah, he's probably just, he's looking in the mirror and saying, you stupid, you blew that. You blew those games to, well, let's see. When was the last time he lost a Super Bowl?
To the Nick Foles-led Philadelphia Eagles a couple of years ago.
Not that long ago.
He's
going
to be like, why did we give up 400 yards to Nick Foles?
Of course.
Super Bowl. We could have won three in a row. They could be the three-time defending champs.
I'm so stupid,
like Scotty in Boogie Nights.
I can't believe I did that.
I'm a bleeping idiot.
You know, sometimes, you know, some of the people that are into weird stuff, sometimes it's they're big, powerful people in their outer world where they need another part of their life where somebody else is in charge.
Right.
I wonder if Bill's kind of like that.
You think?
Maybe. There's probably a weird side to him.
Belichick has a sensei?
Belichick's got kind of a weird side to him. Remember, he paid off that woman that used to be the secretary for the Giants. He bought her a home in New York.
True.
And her husband blamed Bill Belichick for ruining their marriage, all that stuff. I mean, he's got kind of a sexy side.
He's got
him.
A side.
There's sexy Bill.
He's
so
got
who knows
a side.
What he's into. What's that guy into?
I don't know. Freaky stuff.
I don't even want to know.
Freaky
what
stuff.
The hell Bill's into.
So you and I were talking before the show started when we both got in here, and I forgot it's New Year's Eve. Like, it's Tuesday. You and I are both working tomorrow. Like, to me, this is just Tuesday. But then I remembered last night after I hear my neighbors apparently going through a dry run of what tonight is going to be.
Yeah.
Before I go to bed, setting off fireworks last night. I'm like, what are you doing? Practicing your fireworks show for tomorrow?
Sometimes I don't know if I ever, because I've lived in a few different cities. I don't know if until I came to Houston I ever experienced quite as much constant fireworking before and after the holiday, to where it becomes, is this some kind of tradition in some culture I don't know about? If I just, like, where it's a two-week-long celebration?
I don't know.
Something?
It's a good question. People who live down here, who are from here, and then I think once you get here, like you and I did, we brag a lot, especially you and I, because we have relatives up north. We brag to them about how we can do things year-round outside down here.
I wear flip-flops any damn day I please.
Because of the weather, absolutely. And I think, you know, most people up there think, wow, that's really cool. You can play golf. You can, you know, you can walk around town, whatever the case may be. You don't need to wear a heavy coat, really, other than for like 2 weeks out of the whole year. You don't need to wear a heavy coat. No, the main thing that people can do year-round, should they choose to, is set off really, really loud and obnoxious fireworks all year round. That's that was my big awakening when I moved down here. It's like, wow, fireworks are a New Year's thing, huh? Like, New Year's where I grew up was trying to get home without sliding into a ditch.
Yeah, and then it's something that's not, in some places, like firing off a gun in your backyard at midnight is a thing. I remember there's all these stories about in Green Bay, Wisconsin, every now and then. In certain neighborhoods in South Central L.A., it's common for people to go out at New Year's and fire your gun off into the air. So when all of a sudden in Green Bay, some young rookie is out in his backyard firing off a gun at midnight.
Not used to it.
People are a little alarmed by it, yeah.
I've always thought about that, too. Don't the bullets eventually come down that
you
shoot up in the air?
Yeah, that's an issue. Which is, I mean, it's an issue in rural areas.
Right.
I don't know what you do if you're in Los Angeles. I guess they're coming
down somewhere.
It's hitting
something, yeah. It's
there's a Brad Pitt movie, The Mexican, where Brad Pitt pays this dullard that gets sideways with some drug dealer, so he has to do a favor for him down in Mexico. But that's the situation there. Everybody goes out and they're in this town in the middle of Mexico, and they're all firing their guns off in the air at midnight, and then all of a sudden, oh, wait, the bullets are coming back down.
Yeah, that's in Boys in the Hood, too, where Doughboy's firing off his gun up in the air, and that's a machine gun that he's firing up in the air. So it's a lot of bullets that come down.
That's all I wanted when I was a kid, was a machine gun. And I still, you know, Like, can I have something in this life? Can I go get a machine gun?
Is that something you still want to this day?
Not really anymore.
Okay, that's good.
I just want
I would hate for this audio to be submitted as evidence at some point.
Craig Lavity from the Chronicle. Well, yeah. He's not with the Chronicle anymore, but he tweeted something out the other day about how, you know, look, I'm an adult now. If I want a reasonable remote control car, I'm going to go get it.
Yes.
And I thought, reasonable my ass. The best gift you can give to your 12-year-old self, the memory of that 12-year-old, is to get the baddest assist. Whatever car, yeah. The coolest remote control car you could ever dream of as a 12-year-old.
Right.
I think you should get a remote control Prius or something.
Because you can.
Yeah, exactly.
Because you don't have your parents regulating you. So, speaking of stepping back in time, did you happen to catch Bill O'Brien's press conference yesterday?
I did.
All right.
It was a walkthrough. It was John McClain's insistence on driving Oilers history down everybody's throat, whether they like it or not, like it's castor oil. Yeah, it was John McClain trying to make Bill O'Brien drink. Not even the good part. Not even, hey, remember Bum Phillips and how cool he was? No, it was John McClain asking hard-hitting follow-ups about this. This is what he chose to ask hard-hitting follow-ups
about. Literally one of the worst losses in team history. And we're going to play the exchange. Well, let's play the exchange right here. So John McClain, who often leads off the press conferences with Bill O'Brien, he gets the mic first, led off the first press conference leading up to the 2019 NFL playoffs with a question about the 1992 NFL playoffs.
You always say the past doesn't matter when it comes to games. Of course, this has nothing to do with your game Saturday. In college, I guess, when Houston and Buffalo played the biggest chunk in 100-year history.
That's one heck of a way to start off this deal, John.
What do you remember about this game?
Oh, man, that was 30 years ago, almost 26 years ago. Holy smokes. I mean, look, I think this is about this week, and, you know, this is about the Houston Texans versus a very, very good Buffalo Bills team, so I'm not going down that road. Holy smokes, John. That was 26 years ago. Yeah, look, I think, again, 26 years ago. I mean, this is 2000. The game will be played in 2020. So we got a lot of work to do. We got a very tough opponent coming in here that's played very well coached, got a lot of respect for Sean and his staff and how they do things. So we got a big week here.
Okay. I'm going to be blunt here, Seth, and I'm going to be blunt because when we bring up theories and storylines and hypotheses to John McClain, he is not afraid to just shoot them down in cold blood in the middle of this table in front of
us
right
now. That's the dumbest thing I've ever heard.
Right, right. So
why on earth would you sign Terrell Suggs?
Yes.
Who are you going to cut? Who are you going to release to take a guy with playoff and
Joel
Super Bowl
Heath.
Experience?
Joel Heath, who they cut to sign some offensive lineman with a 5-syllable name.
If you want to say goodbye to Joel Heath for just for Terrell Suggs, Joel, can I tell you, he's not as good as he used to be.
Yeah, we're aware.
He's okay.
We're aware. Yeah. I'm going to shoot this down right now because this is what John McClain would do to any of our theories or any of our line of questioning. And I'll do this tomorrow when John's in with us on New Year's Day. Nobody cares about the 1993 playoff game between the Bills and the Oilers when it comes to this game on Saturday. Nobody. Maybe John does, and maybe a few old school Oiler fans, but the idea that it would exorcise demons if the Texans, a completely different franchise 25 years later, were to beat a Bills wild card team in a home game to get to the second round of the playoffs, that would exorcise any demons is one of the most ludicrous things I've ever heard.
This is where it becomes extra pathetic. I'll use John's favorite word, pathetic.
Yeah.
It becomes extra pathetic in that, you know who doesn't give a damn about that game at all? The Buffalo Bills, Josh Allen, Sean McDermott, they might not even be vaguely aware of that game because in Buffalo, that was, I believe, on the way to their fourth Super Bowl loss at that point. Going to the Super Bowl at that point and going through the playoffs had almost become an albatross, like a cross that they had to bear. Mm-hmm. So, We won a playoff game. Here we go again. Going to lose to whoever it was that time. I think the Cowboys in the fourth.
Yes.
So I've listened to Buffalo radio Last week and the exclusive, because I wanted to start to get a jump on the Bills once we knew we were going to play them.
Mm-hmm.
And I haven't heard it mentioned even a single damn time. And I don't know if... It's kind of registered in the lore of Frank Reich, I suppose.
John's the only one I hear mentioning it here.
Not to mention, like, John, does John not remember that last year when the Colts came here in the playoffs, we had to hear the whole damn thing? I had to watch Boomer Esiason interview Frank Reich in the pregame.
Oh, yeah.
It was a whole Frank Reich love fest for the whole damn week before the playoff game, not to mention the two times in the regular season.
Yeah.
We've had our fill of talking about Frank Reich and the Houston Oilers versus the Buffalo Bills in 1993. Just let it die.
Yeah. I'm trying to play this out in my head yesterday when I heard these questions, and I'm going, okay, am I not giving this enough credence about it exercising any demons? And then I played it forward in my head and I said, okay, well, let's pretend that the Texans win the game the exact same way that the Oilers lost the game back in 1993. Let's pretend the Texans fall behind 35-3 to the Buffalo Bills and they come back and they win, you know, in overtime, whatever the final score of the game was. Nope, doesn't exercise any demons. I played it forward. Nope, demons not exercised. Why? Because I don't think the Bills, like, it would be heartbreaking for Bills fans to come into work on Monday and have to talk about that game. But the Bills were in the middle of a run where they were going to four straight Super Bowls back then. The best was the follow-up question.
I'm gonna walk into a McDonald's tomorrow, and some 19-year-old's gonna be behind the counter. I'm gonna be like, hey, buddy. Do you remember when that old lady spilled coffee on her crotch 30 years ago? What are you going to do to make up for it, huh? Are you ready to exercise some demons?
That's a good
analogy.
I'll
take a medium latte.
All right, so we are spending the open of the show here as we begin to prep hardcore for the playoff game on Saturday, 3:35 kickoff right here on Sports Radio 610. We're crossing off storylines. That will not be a storyline this week.
I apologize to anybody for screaming at 6 a.m. this morning. Right before I came
Nobody's
on,
up. It's New Year's Eve.
Right before I came on air, I got an these are my favorite things. The same reason I pretty much quit Twitter, and now I'm almost about to quit radio. I'm not joking. I'm just joking. I'm not going to quit radio.
Yeah,
apparently, somebody is concerned that I've been insulting them, even though I can't even remember actually speaking about this entity.
Really?
And the complaints have been forwarded on to the higher-ups at Entercom.
Are you serious?
Yeah, apparently Seth Payne has said mean things about us. And I'm like, I don't even remember talking about you. Oh, wait, I do. And it was like almost actually glowingly. This happens all the time in this damn business. I'll get word that somebody like, whoa. Seth, I heard you said that the Texans should launch babies off the roof of the stadium.
Yeah.
Is that true?
Yeah.
Like, that's assuredly not true. Well, my neighbor said so.
Yeah.
So now I'm...
As it turns out, you wanted to have baby day at the stadium where babies get in free.
Yeah, exactly.
And they get onesies. Free Texan onesies.
It filters back through the telephone game that, hey, Seth Payne's floating that baby launch and Love You Blue Day again.
All right, so we're off and running.
I'm going to launch babies at John McClain every time he mentions
he'll be in here tomorrow.
Oilers 93.
God, that was funny. All right, actual storylines for the game. Can it be a revenge game if you were the problem? We will talk about that next.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
So I'm getting ready for the show yesterday, and I left my computer open on my counter. And we often do these videos internally here about, hey, don't leave your computer open while you're out in public, which I don't ever do. You know, if I get up to go to the bathroom somewhere and I was using my laptop, I close my laptop, password protected and everything. When I'm in my own house, I figure I'm okay. It's just me, it's Amy. Yesterday, my son, who was staying with us for a couple of days before he goes to the Sugar Bowl to watch Baylor in Georgia. So I left my computer open to leave the room. And apparently, as Sammy was walking past the computer, I had the Google Doc open for our show, and he was able to see you in there, Seth, putting some topics in there. You know how the shared doc works. You can see when the other person's in there typing. I come back, and you and Sammy are having an entire conversation via the Google Doc.
That's right, yeah.
I look there, and I go, I see, like, underneath one of the topics, I think the topic we're about to talk about, I see, sup, Payne?
Yeah.
Sup, Payne? How's it going? Yeah.
We had a good little chat yesterday in the afternoon.
What the hell, man?
It felt like when I was, it was weird. It's almost like when my, when one of my nieces or nephews first gets their first phone.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden you're texting them. They're texting you all the time. That's what I felt like with Sammy. I was like, oh, am I going to, is this going to be a new thing?
Yeah.
Sammy,
you're
and I
there
gonna
like,
be chatting on the
have
Google
a great
Doc
semester,
the
buddy. Yeah. On the Google Doc. Yeah, it was funny. It was fun. Sup, Payne?
I didn't know if he was adding topics or something to there.
No, he could. He's a big sports fan.
Yeah, he's huge.
Both my sons listen to the show. They really enjoy the show. They enjoy you.
They
Sammy
think
you're
sleeps
really funny. Yeah, Sammy listens to the podcast.
I can tell that James, just by meeting those two, you can tell James is the more responsible one, right? Like, I shouldn't say responsible, but maybe he's older. He's more mature.
Yeah. I would
Sammy's
say
got that look in his eyes.
Yeah, I think that's. I think you've.
Sammy looks like he's down for anything.
He's on his way He's on his way to the French Quarter today.
Looks like he could party with Belichick.
He could.
Billy, what are we getting into today?
He could. Yeah, he left the house yesterday with four White Claws.
Yeah.
And got in his car to drive to Louisiana. I'm like, you're not drinking those in the car. He's like, no, they're for my friend who has to meet me in Baton Rouge to drive me to New Orleans. He's not driving all the way to New Orleans. He's just driving to Baton Rouge, leaving his car at his aunt and uncle's house and going to New Orleans. I'm like, okay, it's good. Good to see you guys are using alcohol as currency. I like that.
That's how he's paying him?
He's paying him. He's bringing four White Claws
to give
to him. Is White
Claw expensive?
I gotta get into this
White Claw stuff.
No, it's pretty good. We
gotta figure it out.
The only time we have it in our fridge is when Sammy and James are visiting.
Yeah.
But inevitably, there's two or three left over in the fridge. They're pretty tasty.
This is my most. I'm okay boomering the White Claw stuff.
You shouldn't.
I've been boomering it a lot, and I gotta be like, all right, what are the young kids trying?
Give it a try.
Listen to some of this hip hop music I keep hearing about too.
I hear I can download it to my phone. All right, the actual storylines for this game between the Bills and the Texans, we'll get into X's and O's and things like that at some point this week. But in terms of personalities involved in this game, there are two prominent Buffalo Bill employees, one a player, one a front office guy, where they may have a little chip on their shoulder coming into this game. Bill O'Brien was asked yesterday about Kevin Johnson, former first-round pick for the Houston Texans, who has found a new home in Buffalo and is playing pretty well for the Bills this year. Here's O'Brien's assessment of Kevin Johnson.
Kevin's playing really well. Playing really well. He's healthy. You know, he does a really good job of transitioning. He does a good job of ball hawking. He's playing on special teams. He's doing a lot of things for Buffalo and doing a good job.
All right, so that's O'Brien on Kevin Johnson. Seth, can this be a revenge game for Kevin Johnson?
It can be, but I almost feel that if he treats it like a revenge game, that might be good for the Texans.
Get a little too amped up.
You're right, yeah. You know that one of his, I don't even want to call it a weakness, he's too aggressive for his own good at times, and especially given his body type and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
It's like his body, his ambition writes checks that his body can't cash.
Yeah.
So that's part of it with him. I guess the big difference is somebody yesterday mentioned Kareem Jackson. Yeah, Kareem Jackson is also a guy that's been a really good defensive back in the NFL and was really good for the Texans when their defense was really good. I don't think Kevin Johnson's really allowed to have a revenge game. He was a disappointment here.
He was.
You know, he really was. He didn't play well after he had a promising rookie season. And I think a lot of that is just because of injuries. It's not because he's a bad kid or anything like that or was lazy. It was just his body was giving up on him. I think that obviously everybody's good at putting a chip on their shoulder for whatever reason. But it's just, it's different than Kareem not getting an offer.
You know,
with Kevin Johnson, there's got to be a part of him that understands, look, it's a business, and look, I was never out there for him, and I get it.
Well,
it's time to go prove myself somewhere else.
They had exercised his fifth-year option, but they had right up until the beginning of March of this year to get out from underneath it, and it would have been about $9 or $10 million for a guy who the Texans just couldn't. In retrospect, they probably could have brought him back since they had $1 billion in cap space, so they probably didn't need to cut him necessarily for cap reasons because they came into the year with, I think, $42 million in cap space. So they could have kept him, you know, for cap purposes if they wanted to. The fact of the matter is he plays a position, to me, Seth, he plays a position that's so mental and so psychological that if you're power ranking positions on a football team where a change of scenery is most necessary, when things just start to go sour. Mm-hmm. I feel like cornerback is near the top of the list. That feels like a big time mojo position for me.
Right. And I guess the question for this week would be, okay, how much might he play? Because Levi Wallace, their defensive back, has banged up. I think there was a report on him. I can't find it. He might play. But Tre'Davious White is the really good corner that is probably going to track DeAndre Hopkins a whole bunch. So the question is, okay, how much does Kevin Johnson come in and nickel and dime packages? I think the Texans, I would expect this to be a classic Bill O'Brien game. And in a good way, I think we're establishing the run isn't a bad idea versus the Bills. They're not a good run defense. They're a very good pass defense. Very good overall. I don't want to make, you know, it's one of those things where statistically the run defense doesn't look good, but it's also kind of because they're so good at shutting down the pass, and they get in situations where it's second and 10, so teams run on them and they let up 5 yards. So that it's a better run defense than the statistics would imply, but it is also the part that you would want to attack. I also think that the Texans will probably want to line up a bunch of their heavier personnel just for the matchup's sake. And so it doesn't necessarily look like a big Kevin Johnson day unless the Bills' defensive backs are banged up.
I'm looking at an article with an update on Levi Wallace, the former Alabama cornerback who now plays for the Bills, a big rangy guy. He left the field on a cart with an ankle injury this past weekend against the Jets. The update is Levi Wallace's injury isn't anything major. He suffered an ankle injury in the loss to the Jets on Sunday, had to be carted off the field. It's believed to be just a sprained ankle.
Aha. So we will see Kevin Johnson back. One person that we all saw back this weekend was Brian Gain.
Yes!
Brian Gain, and I'll tell you what,
he was in the building.
He was in the press box. He was doing some advanced scout work for the Bills. Because, as you know, Brian Gain moves back and forth between the Bills and the Texans. He was here.
Yes.
Rick Smith fired him, so he went up to Buffalo. Yeah. Then the Texans hired him back after Rick Smith left. And then he became the general manager, and then of course the Texans fired him this spring, and he went back to Buffalo.
Yeah.
So this is the corridor between Buffalo and Houston.
Keeps getting passed back and forth. He has his house still here. I think his family still lives here. So it's not the first time he's shown up in the building over at NRG Stadium this season.
Yeah, that's life in the NFL. Yeah. You know. Plus, there's got to be a certain, you know, the Texans are still paying him. It's got to feel kind of cool to walk into a place and be like, hey, I'm here to scout against you while you stroke these big checks.
It's way more awkward for the Texan employees that run into him than it is for Gain, right?
Yeah.
Like if you're Gain, you feel like you're somewhere where you're like, ha ha, you can't kick me out.
But then a lot of the personnel staff and those guys are still here too. There are guys that, I mean, it's interesting because there are guys here that Brian Gain hired.
Worked with, yeah.
Yeah, but I guess the only experience I have with that would be on the player side of things. There's guys that get cut all the time.
Yeah.
You know, and that's not awkward because that's management making the decision. I guess it's different when it's the manager, when it's a general manager walking in. We're in the radio business. We associate and see guys all the time that we were fired. Like, you might have replaced him after he was fired or whatever.
And that's true.
It's not a big deal.
That's true. You had a good Tom Coughlin story before the show about something like this.
Oh, well, Coughlin.
Coughlin got fired.
Coughlin got fired from the Giants, and I don't have personal experience with this, but when Coughlin got fired from the Giants, he stuck around and was still working out at the Giants gym facility after he'd gotten fired. Like, he just...
Did they not take away his card?
I don't know. It sounded...
Here, you got to give your key fob away before you even leave the building.
I think Coughlin... My only guess could be that because Coughlin had been there for their first Super Bowls back in the 90s, and then he brought them two more Super Bowls here, I think he probably felt a little bit like Bill Walsh at Stanford, where maybe he felt like, well, I'm the professor emeritus, and I'm just going to be around, you know, and don't worry about me. But I can't imagine a guy that's there. Coughlin affects you when he walks in the room. There is no way he cannot affect you because he's just got that demeanor about him. So for Coughlin to be skulking around, like, even just working out, glaring at the workout machines as he's going through and everything, it had to have been a weird feeling. Eventually, he moved on, but it was as far as I remember, it was a good several weeks where everybody was a little bit uncomfortable and didn't know quite how to address the situation.
I would hate to be the guy that has to eventually break the news to Coughlin, like, hey, buddy, you can't work out in the gym here anymore. Here's how getting fired works, is you're not allowed back in the building at all, buddy.
That would be like in the Moneyball when the chubby fella there had
Jonah Hill
had to fire his first player.
Yeah,
you know? Just yeah. throw him in there. That, but that was just a normal player that was going to take it pretty well in a baseball transaction. It's different than to you can't send an intern after Coughlin.
No, two-time Super Bowl winner. No,
remember he snubbed one of the owners on his way out.
Yeah,
after the press conference yes. and everything.
Yeah, it's good stuff. All right, we'll get an update on Will Fuller's status in the next segment. Also, Texans predictions for 2020. Aaron Reese did some of these for The Athletic. Seth and I will roll through these and see how many of these we agree with. But as we playoff game coming up this Saturday, but we'll keep an eye on 2020 because today is New Year's Eve. Tomorrow we'll begin a brand new decade. We'll get into that next.
Live from the Twin Peaks Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Bill O'Brien gave an update on Will Fuller yesterday. Here it is.
I think he's progressing, and we'll know better as the week goes on. I wouldn't be able to tell you that right now, but I think he's I would say he's headed in a good direction, but we'll have to see as the week goes on.
The initial reports on Fuller after the injury, he suffered the groin injury in Week 16 in Tampa Bay, was that he was definitely going to miss Week 17, which he did, that it was unlikely he would be back for the game coming up this weekend, and that he would more likely be back for the following week. Against whoever the Texans would play, assuming they win this weekend, whoever they would play the following week. How important is Will Fuller? We know he's important just period for this team, Seth, but particularly in this matchup with a defense that has Tre'Davious White, who's going to be able to follow DeAndre Hopkins all over the field. How crucial is Will Fuller?
Well, and even if they don't follow DeAndre Hopkins all over the field, it's that they're capable of playing in multiple different ways. And I keep thinking back. Maybe I'm thinking back too much to that Carolina Panthers game because there's a natural connection there. The defensive coordinator for the Panthers was there when Sean McDermott, the head coach of the Bills, was there. There are a lot of similarities in what they do. But the Panthers also have really good personnel, you know? And it doesn't mean that the Bills and the Panthers The Panthers have Luke Kuechly.
Yeah.
And they have Eric Reed.
Yep.
And it's those two guys especially were what presented a lot of issues for Deshaun Watson. So it's not like it's going to look the exact same way, but they can do a lot of similar things. One of those is that the Bills can play man defense, but they can also be really smart about playing zone defense like Deshaun Watson saw and take away a lot of the deep ball. There's two things that make me optimistic that this will be a lot different than the Panthers game. One is when I went back and just watched a bit of the Panthers game, the first thing that leaped out at me was how much better the offensive line is right now than it was in that game.
Yeah.
And that included, you know, Greg Mance played right guard a good chunk that game. And I can't remember if he started at it or not, or if he had to go in relatively early.
I don't remember either.
He had some rough snaps.
Yeah.
He gave up two sacks in a row. That was the game, everybody, you can remember that Deshaun Watson kind of explained the coverages afterwards. And what the Panthers did was they played a lot of zone defense. They kept everything in front of them. Deshaun only had a couple chances to really take shots, but after that, they only gave Deshaun the underneath. If they wanted to stretch the field, it was going to take some better pass protection than they had that day. So it wasn't just Deshaun, it was the pass protection, it was a whole lot of stuff going wrong. I think they've improved since then, as long as Deshaun doesn't look like he did versus Tampa. Versus Tampa, he just looked off, and hopefully that was because of some injury that's healed since.
Yeah, that's healed, exactly. Yeah. All right, so Aaron Reese did predictions for 2020 for the Texans, and so I think this is a good jumping-off point to look ahead to next year. He's got 10 of them in here, Seth. I thought we might go through these and see if we agree with them, or see if the next time we see Aaron Reese, we walk up to him and say, "You're crazy."
By the way, I just realized
you're crazy.
I didn't actually answer your question about Will Fuller. It's bad. Will Fuller, when they play those conservative coverages, Will Fuller's important because the best way to beat that, if you actually want to beat it, you got to send guys vertical and just get him downfield as long as you have the pass protection to do it, and obviously Will Fuller can do that.
Yeah, and in that Carolina game, that to me, the signature of that game from a Texans perspective was two plays. Deshaun missed the deep ball to DeAndre Hopkins. He missed the deep ball to Will Fuller.
Yeah.
Two throws that Deshaun usually makes, he missed in that game, and it was a game that wound up coming down to one possession. It was a 16-10 loss. All right, so you ready to rapid-fire these here, Seth?
Let's go.
Predictions for 2020.
I usually like Aaron Reese, so yeah, I'm with you, Aaron. Well, don't let me down here.
Yeah, disagree. Even if you disagree, don't let it affect your personal feelings. He's a fine individual. Number one, Deshaun Watson agrees to an extension in 2020.
That will happen. I predict it will happen in early August.
Early August, okay. Yeah. Who loses the staring contest between Patrick Mahomes and Deshaun Watson? Who flinches first and signs a contract?
I think Watson signs first.
You do?
I think Mahomes has more, I think realistically Mahomes should be the higher paid quarterback.
Yeah, yeah.
I feel like Mahomes will say that. Or his agent at least will be that. Well, listen, let's see what Deshaun gets and then we'll make sure that Mahomes is the highest paid guy in the NFL.
I think that's true. I think if you put Deshaun and Patrick Mahomes both out there on the open market, Mahomes would be and you let all 32 teams kind of opine on it, like, okay, they're both available. Which one would you take if you could take one of them? I think Mahomes would win
that.
Well,
yeah, yeah. I mean, he's had the better resume so far. Yeah. He's done more.
Yeah. It's no disrespect to Deshaun, but I agree with you on that. Number two, Laremy Tunsil inks an extension as well.
I would say 90% on that. I don't know. Maybe Laremy, I don't know if the Texans went into this saying, yeah, hell yeah, we're going to make him the highest paid. I feel like Tunsil probably assumes or expects that he's going to get a league-leading contract. So if that's the case, then fine, they'll figure it out. But I also, I don't know, Laremy, there's no reason for Laremy not to drive a hard bargain on this because the Texans spent two first-round picks on him. He's got all the leverage here in terms of just, you know, saying, look, you guys are going to look really, really bad if we stretch this thing out and you have to franchise tag me and then I'm sayonara.
Yeah, in some ways he's got more leverage than Deshaun Watson does just because of what the team gave up to get him.
That's true. They spent more to get him.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, just in terms of draft equity. And there could be, Aaron points this out, there could be an interesting, a similar staring contest that's going to go on between Mahomes and Watson. Could be happening at tackle, too. The two starting Pro Bowl tackles in the AFC are Laremy Tunsil and Ronnie Stanley, the left tackle for Baltimore, who's had a tremendous year. He's not signed an extension yet either. They were both drafted in 2016.
Let's see. Did they actually spend more to get Tunsil? I guess because he wrapped Stills into that deal. And if, at the time,
maybe not.
We were acting like Stills was just like, just an add-on. But no, now you realize, okay.
I guess it's about the same. From a literal standpoint, you may be right. I think it's the perception of the fact that they overpaid to get Tunsil.
It's a guy that you're going to have to pay immediately versus Deshaun, you get that rookie quarterback contract.
True. All right, number three, the Texans stick with their GM by committee approach.
Let's see. Ian Rappaport reported that, and then John kinda got puffy because he figured that's what it was, or he's been saying that's what it was all along.
No,
they're going to stick with it.
I think John. Well, the times I remember John sitting in the chair here in this studio, he has said that he thinks that Nick Caserio is going to be
still
here
thinks
next
he's
year.
I don't know
if he still does, but the last time we brought it up with him, he thought that
a lot of people are saying that there's no way Caserio comes here, and I don't really agree with any of the arguments they have for that. Without getting all into it, I think there's still a lot of reasons that Caserio would want to be here, and so I'm not gonna sign on and say that they're definitely gonna stick with GM by committee. I think that they either. Well, what are we saying? We're saying they're going to keep the current setup, which is really that Bill O'Brien is really the GM as far as we believe.
Yeah, I guess my response to this one would be, even if they bring in a GM, it doesn't change much about what's going on. Like, O'Brien is still going to be the guy where the buck stops.
Yeah.
Even if Caserio comes in, O'Brien's still going to be the guy who has final say on everything. So I don't.
So even if they hire a GM,
that doesn't necessarily change.
He's more just of a, he's a director of personnel.
Yeah.
In that case, I say it's more likely that Caserio doesn't come in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I do think if Caserio goes anywhere, it's going to be here because of his contract. His contract's not up with New England until after the draft. If, like, a true situation where a team needs a GM, they need a GM before the draft. The Texans are now kind of, they've moved on from being a traditional situation. Like, I don't think the Texans are scared of going into the draft without a GM this year.
There's a perception among some media people in New England that Caserio has kind of been imprisoned by Bill Belichick and that he maybe really doesn't even want to be working there anymore and he's going to get the hell out. Caserio's name is so out there now that I would imagine if he does let his contract expire, it's not going to be just the Texans that might be going after him. So that's where I don't think the Texans will lose him to New England. I think they'll lose him to a team where he gets to be an actual GM.
Okay. Number four, the two biggest surprises of this season return. That would be Darren Fells, who's here on a 1-year, $1.5 million deal, and Carlos Hyde, who was traded here for Martinez Rankin. They're both older players. Hyde's going to be 30 next season, so he's already kind of past that age that running backs tend to start to dip. Not like he's had the wear on the tire like a bell cow back would have, but he is going to be 30 next season. Fells is a much older player than I think people think. He's 34 years old.
34, but he's young in football years because he he spent all that time playing basketball, which isn't so easy on your body either when you're a bigger dude.
No,
so I think that only one of those guys comes back maximum, and I don't think it'll be Carlos Hyde. I think Carlos Hyde is a guy that they identified. I think the Texans have a pool of running backs out there that they think are kind of all just one big commodity, guys that could come in and run in this system. So if Carlos Hyde is going to try to maybe get one last respectable paycheck, I don't think he's going to get it from the Texans.
I could see the Texans drafting a running back. Which I would like to see.
I wonder how they feel about that, though. They probably like what they spent for Hyde a lot better than they like spending a draft pick. And I think they think that there's more guys like that out there.
Maybe. Yeah, that could be the case.
Because they also did spend a third rounder on Duke Johnson. So.
Yeah. I just think, you know, running back is not a position that's valued very highly in the draft. Well, I shouldn't say that. With Fournette and McCaffrey and now Josh Jacobs is really good. Saquon. Yeah, so maybe I'm off on that. They don't have a pick in the first round. So if they're going to pick a running back that is worth plugging into a committee, then it's probably going to be the second round pick they'll need to use.
Darren Fells, I really, really, really want them to keep Darren Fells.
Love him.
But they also, I think the Texans, I think that the plan is for the two Jordans to come along and become, you know, something.
Okay. From your lips to God's ears. Jordan Thomas has been awful this year.
Yeah.
He's been terrible.
Yeah, he came back. He's banged up. Give him a break. Give him until February or March or so. That's the biggest disappointment. He's so big. All these guys, though? Sometimes it goes to show you. You wonder, okay, why aren't these tight ends better blockers? There's a reason they're tight ends. There's a reason they're not outside linebackers. There's a reason they're not inside linebackers. Like, all these guys have the body type to be defensive ends or what have you. There's a reason they're on the offensive side of the ball. And some of it is that they're just maybe not naturally the most physical guys.
This is where
they like to catch and play and run.
Yeah, and play.
Yeah.
You sound like they're running around the backyard. This is where social media gets me, too, because of the videos that show up online. What's Brendan Scarlett's thing called? B-Scar TV.
Yeah.
Used to be KJAX TV when Kareem was there. B-Scar TV, greater than KJAX TV. But the KJAX TV was a little overrated. Anyways, when he has different players popping up in the locker room doing the man on the street thing with them, when a player pops up on B-Scar TV who is playing terribly and they're in there laughing and chuckling on B-Scar TV, it makes me angry.
You feel like they should be miserable.
They should
be
wallowing in the misery that we're experiencing from having to watch him miss blocks on the edge and drop easy passes over the middle.
They should be in the Belichick booth self-flagellating.
Yes.
Like whipping themselves in the back. Like,
yeah, well, that's a little extreme, but yeah.
Like the priest in that Tom Hanks movie.
Yes, yeah. Exact same thing. All right, next one here. Let's rapid fire these. Houston won't sign an impact free agent to a one-year contract. These are Aaron Reese's predictions for 2020.
Won't sign who to a one-year contract?
They won't do a deal like they did with Matthew last year or Roby this year.
Oh, hell
like
yeah,
the one-year prove-it deal. Yeah,
what
I disagree.
What are you talking about, Aaron Reese? This is the best thing the Texans do.
Yeah.
They're becoming the one-year stop. They're like a train station on the way to free agency riches, and it's a smart move by the Texans because they get these guys for relatively cheap and with no obligation to them while your younger guys develop. I think if anything, they double down on this and get a couple Roby-type signings.
They're like a train station in Bakersfield, California, next stop Rodeo Drive.
Yeah, baby.
Getting these guys paid. Number six, the team's top cornerbacks for 2020 are already on the roster.
Unfortunately, yes.
I 1,000% agree with this. I don't think Roby's going to be back. I think Jonathan Joseph is going to retire, and I think your top three corners next year are Lonnie Johnson, Vernon Hargraves, and Gerrion Conley. Not necessarily in that order.
Look, as long as Hargraves starts poking out one out of four or five balls that he tries to go for the strip instead of the tackle, and hey, there you go, turnovers. I can't have a whole season of watching Hargraves trailing guys across the middle and then missing the tackle.
Wait, power rank those three. Of those three, Lonnie Johnson, Gerrion Conley, Vernon Hargraves.
Okay, Gerrion Conley, number one.
Okay.
Right now, Vernon Hargraves, but I feel like ideally Lonnie Johnson number two and then Hargraves three.
Johnson had a good game on Sunday. O'Brien pointed that out. All right, number seven, the Texans make one change to their starting offensive line.
Right, yeah, and I think
Zach Fulton.
Yeah, I think that somebody will end up being there instead of Zach Fulton.
Yeah, Zach Fulton has a $7 million cap hit next year with no dead money. He will not be back.
That's right, they can release him with no harm at all. They'll be saving money.
They'll just slide your guy Manson there.
Yeah.
The Manser.
Yeah, yeah.
And Mance hopefully he plays better than he did against Carolina in week four.
What's Mance's situation, though, too? He's
They signed him to an extension last year.
Oh, that's right.
Like one of those little below-the-radar, like three-year, $6 million kind of dealios.
Yeah.
Number eight. Oh, you and I talked about this yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
Houston places the franchise tag on DJ Reader.
You know, at his position, it actually makes a lot of sense. And I was going through, I was looking at a few different things. I was trying to be realistic about it because in my mind, I put DJ in this box, and it's almost like out of a defensiveness over guys like him. I always feel like they're perpetually underpaid. I feel like they don't get credit for what they do.
Mm-hmm.
I think realistically, though, he will get credit for what he's done because a lot of what he does is like it's pretty identifiable. You know, a huge portion of his tackles, especially for a defensive lineman, a huge portion of his tackles are tackles for no gain or tackles for a loss or just within a couple. Like, he does exactly what he's supposed to be doing. He does get push up the middle. And I think the Texans will look at franchise tagging him as a reasonable expense. So I'd be surprised if DJ's gone. If they let him test free agency, then I think he's gone.
Yeah.
So I think there's a good chance they tag him.
Yeah, I agree with that. Number nine, the Texans draft another receiver. Okay. They don't have a pick till the second round. It's Will Fuller insurance.
So far, Aaron's doing a good job on these. I think he's batting about 750 or so. I can't give him credit for this one because, okay, if they draft one in the seventh round, does that count?
Yeah.
Are they going to use a pick in the top four rounds?
He needs to be more specific.
It's hard to peg that down because once you get outside the first couple rounds, a lot of it just becomes based on need. So,
Aaron, if you're listening, they can't draft a receiver, as Seth said, in like the sixth round and then have you walk up to us and go, see? See? I told you they draft a receiver. Last one, number 10, Houston wins the AFC South again next year.
Yeah. Let's see. What would it take to put the Jaguars or the Colts in contention?
Boy.
Well, Jacoby Brissett without a torn MCL.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think he's not historically been as inaccurate as he's been since his MCL this year. So that might change, and they might have a completely different quarterback. I don't know.
I would say, and you're giving Chris Ballard one more draft to fortify that roster. He's done a good job the last 2 years of finding guys.
The Jaguars, man, I just can't see it right now. Their defense is going to be 1 year older.
No, they don't have a solution at quarterback either.
Yeah.
I don't think Gardner Minshew is necessarily he may be a long-term solution, who knows? I don't know that he's a solution that wins the AFC South next year. Foles is a disaster.
They can't move forward with Gardner Minshew. You know what? I want to go get in the Belichick booth and start whipping myself over just me being kind of bullish on Gardner Minshew.
You mentioned the Colts and the Jags. I mean, what about the Titans? To me, the Titans are the biggest threat in the division.
Right, I can see them winning.
Oh, I got you.
I was just kind of looking at the two that I wouldn't expect to win.
Right.
Yeah, it's going to be a battle with the Titans.
Kevin Harlan there's a lot of reasons why Kevin Harlan is awesome. Do we want to do this here, or we want to carry this into the next segment?
Let's carry it into the next
one. How long is the audio? All
right. It's too long.
It's too long. All right, well, let's do it. We'll do it in the next segment. A lot of reasons Kevin Harlan is the greatest. Right now, for my money, he's the best play-by-play guy. He showed off yet another reason why on Sunday. We'll get into that, and also some talk about the Texans offense. Has the Texans offense actually improved? We feel like they're more talented. Have they really improved, though? We'll talk about that next.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.